Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 24th day of July, 2021. I'm your host, Mark Call. Let's spend the next few minutes talking about what is going on around a formerly free nation and a world that is descending into tyranny almost as fast, starting with a couple of stories that'll help set the tone. In North Carolina, the Biden-Fuhrer brown shirts are on the march, now roving door-to-door in Mecklenburg County, that's the Charlotte, North Carolina area, seeking to pressure people who haven't yet been convinced to take the poke into getting an on-the-spot injection for the Fauci flu. The Fox News coverage is a bit more Big Brother friendly. They say health department workers and community outreach groups have kicked off a doses to doors COVID-19 take the poke campaign in Mecklenburg County, where just 49% of the people there have been duped and doped. Said one Twitter user, they don't move that fast to help people when they know a hurricane is coming. In a way, I guess you've got to compare that with Italy, where thousands of people in the Turin area took to the streets after new harsh government restrictions on unvaccinated people, known as the Green Pass rather than the Mark of the Beast, were put into place. Seems that people there are angry about what Big Brother and Mario Draghi are trying to do to them, and they're trying, at least a little, to push back. In England, it looked earlier in the week like the truth might be starting to emerge, at least a little. Courtesy of Christina Leyland, the Gateway Pundit, 60% of the people currently being admitted to the hospital there with the booga booga flu, COVID-1984, have been, wait for it, fully vaccinated, according to Sky News. And Sir Patrick Vallance, the government's chief scientific advisor, most of the COVID patients have in fact received two doses of the not vaccine, aka the Zyklon B poke. Quote, in terms of the number of people in hospital who've been double vaccinated, he said, we know it's around 60% of the people being admitted to hospital with COVID. We do expect there to be over 1,000 people per day being hospitalized with coronavirus because of the increase in infections, he added. But the rates should be lower than they have been previously because of the protective effects of vaccination. That's my story. Oh, that's my story. Well, I ain't got a witness, and I can't prove it. But that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Yes, he said, quote, they're very, very effective, but not 100%. No, truth be told, and it's not being, they're probably closer to 100% effective at killing people than protecting them. In the long run, certainly many are being sterilized in the meantime, and about 80% of those that are stupid enough to take it while pregnant are being made unpregnant. Some are now even calling it the morning after poke. But back to the Sir Whopper press conference. Still trying to rationalize as so many of the vaccinated are falling ill from the booga booga flu, he continued, quote, and as a higher proportion of the population is double vaccinated, it's inevitable that those 10% of that very large number remain at risk and therefore will be amongst the people who both catch the infection and end up in hospitals. Now, guess what? Arguably, after a bit of behind-the-scenes therapy himself, Sir Patrick is now claiming he misspoke on Monday's press conference. Uh-oh! Correcting a statistic I gave at the press conference today, 19 July, about 60% of hospitalizations he claimed this time around from COVID are not, no, in spite of what I said before, from double-vaccinated people. Rather, 60% of hospitalizations from COVID are currently from unvaccinated people. He lied in a tweet. But it's really not clear, says the Zero Hedge story, how he was able to so horrendously misspeak after he went on an entire two-minute detailed diatribe trying to backpedal and explain why 60% of the people being admitted to the hospital have been, as he put it, fully vaccinated. And yes, also double vaccinated. Can you just smell something here? But arguably, that's significantly less devious than what America's death merchants, the CDC, are up to here. And we've got two stories as of Friday morning that make that point. From Natural News and Ethan Huff, and it would seem that it's evidently to drive their false narrative that it's vaccines protecting people against the deadly booga booga flu, the CDC has now officially stopped testing people if they're vaccinated for it. Well, that certainly takes care of the problem they had in Britain, doesn't it? Maybe that way, says Huff, they'll be able to blame all of the deaths on the unvaccinated. You just don't count the ones you don't want to include in the numbers. As he puts it, according to reports, the CDC has decided to test only unvaccinated people for the booga-booga flu from here on out in order to make it appear that the only people actually catching the variants are those who decided not to permanently alter their genomes with experimental drugs from Big Brother. The Business Insider said this, the CDC stopped monitoring non-severe COVID-19 cases among vaccinated people back in May. It's hard to assess Delta's risk without knowing what mild breakthrough cases look like or whether or not they're becoming more common, unquote. But folks, if you're able to lie about the figures with impunity, it makes it easier for Big Brother to claim that the only people getting sick from the Wuhan bioweapon are the unvaccinated. And sadly, that's not the complete extent of the ever-increasing big lie. Said Robert Schmerling, associate professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School, by tracking only cases requiring hospitalization or causing death, we may miss the chance to learn how people with milder disease are affected by the Delta or other variant infections, such as how long their symptoms last and how the infection may disrupt their lives, unquote. Continued the Harvard prof, there'll be no way to know truly how effective or ineffective the Chinese virus injections are at keeping various variants at bay if the CDC refuses to maintain accurate data sets across the full spectrum of vaccinated versus unvaccinated people, unquote. And hey, folks, isn't it obvious by now that that's precisely the point? But wait a minute, when it comes to lying with figures, the central death coordinators are just getting rolling. Earlier, the CDC linked VAERS website, which reports at least a tiny fraction of vaccine adverse effects and deaths, officially recorded 11,140 deaths from the Zyklon B COVID poke in the United States, up from 9,125 just a week ago. These, of course, are numbers that would have caused any other vaccine or drug in U.S. history to be immediately pulled from the market. But no longer, since the goal is obviously something else entirely. And on Wednesday, says a piece from the Gateway Pundit, the CDC on their own website posted that there were 12,313 reported deaths from the COVID poke since December, basically tracking with the VAERS website number, up until a strange thing happened. Just a few hours later, they switched it to only 6,079 reported deaths in the U.S. from the COVID death poke. In other words, says Jim Hoft, the CDC deleted 6,000 vaccine deaths from its website in just 6 hours. What gives, he asks. And all your host can add is, yeah, that's pretty blatant, even for them. But come to think of it, it does sound like something that might happen in Maricopa County. Now, color me cynical, folks, but somehow your host is going to suggest this next story or two is related, given the depth and breadth of the big lie, only slowly being revealed, even as it accelerates. Midweek, CNN hosted what's been called a dumpster fire of a town hall meeting with the senile imposter in the White House, moderated ever so appropriately by the feckless Don Lemon, which turned out to have averaged only 1.5 million viewers during prime time. Why, he probably stole a lot more votes than that. That was only a tiny fraction of all of those people that were watching something, anything else. And note at TGP, with pictures to prove it, not only did very few Americans bother to watch the Chinese puppet at home, the town hall auditorium was nearly empty as well. And just maybe it's brilliant feats of inspiring rhetoric like this one that help explain why. This, by the way, was in response to, well, who knows what was asked. Biden doesn't. Quite frankly, who cares?
That's underway, just like the other question that's illogical. And I've heard you speak about it because you always, I'm not being solicitous, but you're always straight up about what you're doing. Yeah. And the question is whether or not we should be in a position where you are, why can't the experts say, we know that this virus is in fact, it's going to be, we know why all the drugs approved are not.
I guess, folks, one thing we also know is that the Russians weren't watching, or they probably would have ordered a first strike. But I can't deny there's certainly a counterpoint argument. Maybe they just realized that any once great power that would put up with so-called leadership like this is already too far gone to worry about. From there, let's look back to earlier in the week for other big lies finally being revealed. Like this one, courtesy of BuzzFeed, InfoWars, and even the UK's Daily Mail, about how the federal bunglers of instigation and their informants quote, had a hand in nearly every aspect of the alleged plot that they seem to have hatched, fomented, funded, and pursued to kidnap Governor Gretchen Whitmer, the evil one, and then blame the far right for it, starting from its inception, says the report originally from BuzzFeed News. And as I said, even the UK's Daily Mail almost gets it. Their headline asks it as a question, though. Were Governor Gretchen Whitmer's would-be kidnappers, at least they put that in quotes, victims of FBI entrapment? How, they say, the feds had at least 12 different informants in the Michigan militia gang who encouraged the bizarre and intended to fail plot. And the subheading says it all. The October arrest of 14 people, almost as many as the number of informants involved in the Michigan plot, is now raising questions, as have been raised before, about the FBI's misuse, I changed their word, of informers and the limits, if any, to their power. The story even notes that between 2012 and 2018, obviously in the heart of the Obama era, and yes, we certainly know that included the first couple of years of trying to undermine President Donald Trump, the FBI spent an average of $42 million a year on payments through false flag artists, aka confidential informants. And as the Daily Mail story begins, the FBI has been accused, and certainly not for the first or even the dozenth time when it comes to treachery and false flags, of encouraging and assisting a Michigan militia with their alleged plot to kidnap Gretchen Whitmer, with court documents showing the remarkable depth of their involvement via multiple informants. Seems to have turned out, folks, that it wasn't the Michigan militia's plot at all. It was the FBI's plot, and they were just stupid enough to fall for it. But with at least a dozen embedded surrogates, according to the BuzzFeed investigation, they went way beyond simply listening and infiltrating, and instead actively recruited others to the plot, and even funded and directed it. They've claimed that without the FBI informants' involvement, there simply would have been no plot at all. And here, at least, the Daily Mail does point in the right direction. Because lawyers for the victim set up in the Capitol Hill false flag on January 6th will no doubt be watching very closely amid claims, they say, by Tucker Carlson and others that the FBI spurred on that so-called insurrection similarly. But once they start quoting the outrageously discredited Bill of Rights-hating far-left Southern Poverty Law Center, you know it's time to move on to something more truthful. And we will. Here's how BuzzFeed put it in their original story. In the inky darkness of a late summer night, last September, three cars filled with armed men began circling Birch Lake in northern Michigan, looking for ways to approach Governor Gretchen Whitmer's three-bedroom vacation cottage, then subdue her, using a stun gun if necessary, and drag her away. It goes on to describe the alleged participants, from an Iraq war veteran to a biker dude. And then it says, the men planned for all kinds of obstacles, but there was one thing they didn't anticipate. The FBI had been listening in all along. And I have to ask, just how stupid were they, really? Because you know that everything you think, do, and say is being monitored by all kinds of three-letter organizations. Where have they been? And if somebody talks about initiating violence, yeah, you just about know for sure. He's probably an FBI or other three-letter agency plant. Says BuzzFeed, quote, for 6 months, the Iraq war vet had been wearing a wire, gathering hundreds of hours of recordings. And he wasn't the only one. A biker who had traveled from Wisconsin to join the group was another informant, the man who'd advised them on where to put the explosives and offered to get them as much as the task would require was an undercover FBI agent, and so was a man in one of the other cars who said but little and went by the name Mark. The story goes on to add that the government has documented at least 12 confidential informants who assisted the sprawling investigation, or false flag setup, and an examination of the case by BuzzFeed News also reveals that some of those informants, acting under the direction of the FBI, played a far larger role than has previously been reported. Working in secret, they did more than just passively observe and report on the actions of the suspects. Instead, they had a hand in nearly every aspect of the alleged plot, starting from its inception. The extent of their involvement raises questions as to whether there would have even been a conspiracy, quote-unquote, without them. Well, you know what, folks? There was a conspiracy, and it was done by the same treasonous three-letter organizations that have been engaged in a long-term conspiracy not only to undermine and destroy the Constitution and government of these formerly free United States, but, as is now becoming undeniable, to kill hundreds of millions of Americans along the way. And just how, you might be wondering, as if we didn't already know, do the three-letter traitorous agencies learn who and how to target? Of course, they use their public-private partnerships. From Steve Watson and Summit News about how the Pentagon, once actually charged with defending the United States as opposed to undermining them via their standard private partner, is tracking extremist web searches. You got to put the word extremist in quotes, of course, including how dare anybody search for something like the truth about Black Lives Matter. This, folks, is truly totalitarian BS. As a guest on Tucker Carlson put it, discussing the program, it's completely out of control. From there, on we go to today's genocide front update, starting with this piece out of New South Wales, where the chief health officer, sick, down under, gave a press conference telling Australians that they shouldn't even, quote, engage in conversation with each other anymore in the new tyranny there, even if they're wearing masks in order to, oh yeah, reduce the transmission of the booga booga flu. Yes, really, said Summit News and Paul Joseph Watson. Dr. Kerry Chant made the remarks in response to people in New South Wales being ordered to comply with yet another lockdown triggered by just a bare handful of new cases. And she updated them on what is now forbidden in formerly free Australia, saying, whilst it's human nature to engage in conversation with others, to be friendly, unfortunately, this is not the time to do that, said the wannabe tyrant. So, she continued, even if you run into your next door neighbor in the shopping center, don't start up a conversation. Now is the time for minimizing your interactions with others, even if you've got a mask. Yes, even if you're properly muzzled, like Big Brother wants you to be, do not think that affords total protection. How's that for a hidden whopper, folks? It doesn't afford any protection. But that's not the point now, is it? We want to be absolutely sure that as we go about our daily lives, whatever that now means there, we do not come into contact with anyone else. That would pose a risk. Unquote. So see, even though we have some massively satanically evil people here, like Dr. Frankenfauci, America's version of Dr. Mengele, there are nutcases in high positions all over the world. Still, though, when it comes to being truly evil, Fauci pretty much has a lock on the worldwide championship there. So let's go next to what might really and hopefully will be the big story of the day. We started out with some more tests along by the guy who seems to want to be Satan's personal MD on Capitol Hill. And I wish that was an exaggeration, folks, but just to prove that it's not, I'm going to play an extended excerpt from the testifying, and in particular, the grilling that he richly deserved from Kentucky Senator Rand Paul.
Dr. Fauci, as you are aware, it is a crime to lie to Congress. Section 1001 of the U.S. Criminal Code creates a felony and a 5-year penalty for lying to Congress. On your last trip to our committee on May 11th, you stated that the NIH has not ever and does not now fund gain-of-function research in the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And yet, gain-of-function research was done entirely in the Wuhan Institute by Dr. Xi and was funded by the NIH. I'd like to ask unanimous consent to insert into the record the Wuhan virology paper entitled Discovery of a Rich Gene Pool of Bat SARS-Related Coronaviruses. Please deliver a copy of the journal article to Dr. Fauci. In this paper, Dr. Xi credits the NIH and lists the actual number of the grant that she was given by the NIH. In this paper, she took 2 bat coronavirus genes, spike genes, and combined them with a SARS-related backbone to create new viruses that are not found in nature. These lab-created viruses were then shown to replicate in humans. These experiments combined genetic information from different coronaviruses that infect animals but not humans to create novel artificial viruses able to infect human cells. Viruses that in nature only infect animals were manipulated in the Wuhan lab to gain the function of infecting humans. This research fits the definition of the research that the NIH said was subject to the pause in 2014 to 2017, a pause in funding on gain of function. But the NIH failed to recognize this, defines it away, and it never came under any scrutiny. Dr. Richard E. Bright, a molecular biologist from Rutgers, described this research in Wuhan as, "The Wuhan lab used NIH funding to construct novel chimeric SARS-related coronaviruses able to infect human cells and laboratory animals. This is high-risk research that creates new potential pandemic pathogens that exist only in the lab, not in nature. This research matches, these are Dr. Ebright's words, this research matches, indeed epitomizes, the definition of gain-of-function research, done entirely in Wuhan, for which there was supposed to be a federal pause. Dr. Fauci, knowing that it is a crime to lie to Congress, do you wish to retract your statement of May 11th where you claimed that the NIH never funded gain-of-function research in Wuhan?
Wow. And let's be clear what he's doing here. Hey, I'm giving you a chance, you lying, mass-murdering traitor, to back off from the great big whopping lies you've been telling, or else. Instead, the man who may be the most evil person drawing breath on planet Earth, in your host's opinion at least, doubled down and said,
Senator Paul, I have never lied before the Congress, and I do not retract that statement. This paper that you are referring to was judged by qualified staff up and down the chain.
Yeah, all of whom serve at my pleasure.
Was judged by qualified staff up and down the chain as not being gain of function.
Well, that all depends on what the meaning of gain of function is.
So what was? Let me finish.
You take an animal virus and you increase its transmissibility to humans.
Right.
You're saying that's not gain of function?
Yeah, that is correct. And Senator Paul, you do not know what you are talking about, quite frankly. And I want to say that officially. You do not know what you are talking about.
Time out. Enough of that lying scumbag. Dr. Paul is, in fact, a medical doctor, an ophthalmologist, and I dare say he's treated more patients in a month than Fauci has treated in an entire career, unless you count those that are dead because of his quote-unquote expertise. And after some shouting, Dr. Paul reads their definition of gain of function.
This is your definition that you guys wrote. It says that scientific research that increases the transmissibility among mammals is gain of function. They took animal viruses that only occur in animals, and they increased their transmissibility to humans. How you can say that is not gain of function?
It is not.
It's a dance, and you're dancing around this because you're trying to obscure responsibility for 4 million people dying around the world from a pandemic.
Oh, how dare you, he thinks. Call me out for mass murder. Yeah, he's been getting away with it so far, but the good news here is that day may be over, folks. At least when it comes to perjury or lying to Congress. Later that afternoon, an update from Zero Hedge says that, to borrow a phrase popularized by millennials, Senator Rand Paul has found the receipts, apparently proving that Fauci lied about the NIH financing gain-of-function research for bat coronaviruses at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Just one more reminder, they said, that Fauci and other so-called senior public health officials are prioritizing the protection of the narrative over the science. Let's not forget, note most stories covering this exchange, that this was the very same guy who lied for over a year about anything associated with the possibility, oh, you're scientifically illiterate if you even think that could have happened, i.e. the virus being bioengineered and then having somehow escaped from the Wuhan bioweapons lab. Accidentally, or oh, heaven forbidden, Fauci's not even going to go there, on purpose. And when it came to Fauci's asinine retort to Dr. Paul that you don't know what you're talking about, a number of reporters, including even one from the Washington Post, stepped up to point out that Dr. Fauci was in fact wrong, or maybe just lying through his damnable teeth. And as Zero Hedge notes, they've been reporting since at least March of last year that the NIH and the subset that Fauci's been in charge of for decades in fact helped finance gain-of-function research involving bat coronaviruses overseen by the bat lady herself, Dr. Xi Zhengli, via that third party, Echo Health Alliance. Later yesterday, Dr. Paul appeared with Sean Hannity on Fox News, and he was asked the important question. Yes, you cited the penalties for lying to Congress, and is it your belief that that is precisely what this guy did?
Yes, and I will be sending a letter to the Department of Justice asking for a criminal referral because he has lied to Congress.
And later he said, given that Fauci has at least what he called tangential responsibility, if this came from the lab he was funding, my God, just imagine the moral culpability the man has, unquote. And that takes us to the break. We'll be right back.
Just like yesterday.
Welcome back now to the second segment of the show for this evening. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and we'll start this one off with a bit of a musical intro. Already did that. And, of course, a news intro to go along with it. We'll call it, clearly, The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly. Trouble is, when I got to looking into more details of the story I had put into the good category, story singular, I found out that, it really is a smokescreen and probably belongs in the ugly category for that reason. I looked a bit more, though, and found this, at least it's partly good. The COVID-19 Origin Act was introduced in the Senate by Josh Hawley of Missouri and Mike Braun of Indiana and passed unanimously back in May, according to Town Hall. Then it was brought to the House floor, where one of the co-sponsors, Brad Winstrup of Ohio, said the best disinfectant is sunlight, and that's what we can provide today. This bill first establishes that we must identify the precise origins of COVID-19 because it is critical for preventing a similar pandemic in the future. Then he said, I cannot stress enough that this bill is not controversial by any means. In fact, it passed the Senate in May with unanimous consent. Not one senator objected. Not Ted Cruz or Rand Paul, not Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren. If all of them can get on board with this bill, why shouldn't we all be able to do the same? Trouble is, House Democrats on Tuesday blocked that bill, which would require the Director of National Intelligence to declassify information related to the U.S. government's investigations, whether they're full of lies or not, into the Wuhan coronavirus pandemic, and in particular, what role the Wuhan Institute of Virology played in the outbreak. The bill failed in the House by a vote of 216 to 207, and it is fair to ask the question, what are they hiding and why? And I think the fact that they're doing it reveals a good part of the answer, because transparency is an enemy of tyranny. On then to just plain more bad. The National Park Service now plans to spy on picnics, family gatherings, weddings, and much more, according to Lou Rockwell, and a notice that they found published in the Federal Register, demonstrating that the Department of the Interior is turning the National Park Service, NPS, into a mirror image of the NSA, FBI, DHS, and every other TLA, three-letter spy agency you can think of. Quote, pursuant to the provisions of the Privacy Act, yeah, sure, of 1974, as amended, the Interior DOI is issuing a public notice of its intent to modify the National Park Service Privacy Act system of records. And then they give a whole bunch of bureaucratic details, but the so-called modification, says the piece, of special records permits will allow law enforcement to collect a disturbing amount of personal information on national park visitors. And as NextGov points out, anyone now wanting to get a permit to one of America's 423 national parks will have all of their personal information sent to the White House, not to mention a whole bunch of other unconstitutional federal three-letter agencies. Yeah, NPS is making it easier to share more data with the White House and other federal agencies on applications and approvals, says Lou Rockwell. America's absurd war on terror is now targeting picnics, family gatherings, weddings, and so forth. Their source notes that people interested in using a park for a specific purpose at a specific time generally have to obtain a special use permit. There are three types: standard events like weddings, sports, picnic, and family gatherings, special events like demonstrations, races, tournaments, and the like, and construction, research, and utility work. And when users apply for such permits, they are required to provide a wealth of information that is allegedly needed to process the application, including name, organization, social security numbers, tax identification numbers, date of birth, address, telephone number, fax number, email addresses, persons, personal titles, information on proposed activity, including alpha code, permit number, date, location, number, participants, type of vehicles, type of use, equipment, support personnel for the activity, company, project name, LPS, liability insurance information, payment information, information on special activities permits, including the number of minors, livestock, special effects, technicians, license and permit numbers, stunts. And you know what, folks? This keeps on going and going. And this is only a half-hour show. They even want vehicle information, including not only year, make, model, color, but plate number, insurance information, and weight. Does anybody, they ask, really believe that park rangers or campground hosts need SSNs, DOBs, and bank account numbers for everybody that comes in so they can decide whether to approve or deny your permission to use a national park? More on the bad side, more than 32,000 websites worldwide were down as a massive DNS failure originated a little after 11 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time. The global issue, according to Oracle, was said to be related to Akamai Edge DNS servers that are impacting access to many internet resources, including Oracle Cloud properties. A statement from Akamai Technologies said that they were aware of an emerging issue with the Edge DNS service and are actively investigating. Now, in case you've forgotten, DNS servers are the things on the web that take a website name, like Hebrew Nation Online, and convert it into an IP address so that you can actually find the site without knowing all of those numbers. And when they go down, since most people don't know all the numbers, you can't find them. So on then to the ugly. And in this case, it's pretty ugly. This comes from Jeff Reynolds via PJ Media, also places like Zero Hedge, and it's about an Oregon leftist named Earl Blumenauer who infests the House of Representatives and just hates billionaires. Actually, he seems to hate anybody that disagrees politically or economically or any other way with the far left, but he especially hates billionaires, or for that matter, anybody being allowed to have the freedom to spend their money the way they'd like to. In other words, he hates freedom in general. But when it comes to billionaires who have a lot of money and therefore lots of freedom and ways to spend it, he hates them even more. And he especially hates them spending their money to go into space. After first Richard Branson and then Jeff Bezos both went into space on private vehicles during the course of this month, he hates the idea so much that he wants to do what? Well, what every leftist does, folks, if you can't prohibit it outright, tax it into non-existence. What he wants now is a space tax. Saying, let's be clear, the purpose of these short trips to space isn't scientific research. They're for bragging rights and to give the uber wealthy a new way to use their fortune. They're also, folks, to inspire other people who might have dreamed about going into space ever since they were knee-high to a bunny rabbit that they might someday be able to do the same, unless cretins like him prevent anybody from doing anything that's fun. Or for that matter, just about anything they don't think you should be allowed to, which is everything they don't see the need for personally. Oh, and like we've seen with firearms, they may see the need for them to have firearms, they just don't like the idea of you having something. Just as you and I pay taxes, he said, when we buy airline tickets. Yeah, some of us used to buy airline tickets, folks, and they made that so damnably noxious that we don't even want to think about it anymore. But he said billionaires who can afford to fly into space and produce nothing of scientific value should do the same, and then some. Full stop. The man is a blithering idiot. And on this score now, I've got to digress and tell a brief story. I've had the privilege of knowing engineer and aircraft designer Burt Rutan for a number of years. Since the 1990s, at this point, this is the fellow who designed literally dozens of successful home-built aircraft, and he pioneered technologies like composites for the structure of airplanes. Thousands of plans for his dozens of designs of successful aircraft have been sold, and they're flying all over the world today. And I dare say he's done a lot more for the advancement of aviation and science than this cretin in Oregon ever dreamed of, by allowing people to literally, with their hands, build their dreams and take flight. The first time I saw Burt Rutan at the Oshkosh fly-in talk about building a home-built space plane, flying it into space, and actually putting together the XPRIZE to help encourage others to do the same, he referred to NASA as NASA, saying that one of the biggest obstacles to private entrepreneurs actually building and flying airplanes and later space vehicles was NASA itself, and of course the big brother federal government that wants to prohibit and yes, now tax anything that might represent a frontier in technology that they don't necessarily think the peon should be allowed access to. I remember on another occasion seeing Burt deliver an absolutely astounding presentation comparing the first few years of manned flight with the first 20 years of manned space flight, and noting pointedly that since it was private entrepreneurs that built the airplanes, flew them, and yes, occasionally had accidents and some even died in them, the advancement in technology during those first few years was nothing short of awe-inspiring. And he compared that to the completely government-controlled first few decades of spaceflight, where the number of new designs and people who'd ever been able to use them to fly themselves was literally minuscule compared to just the first few years after the Wright brothers. As Burt said then, and he certainly inspired my imagination at the time, if I'm ever going to go into space, it's going to be on something that I designed and built myself. Whereupon he proceeded to design and build White Knight and Spaceship One and win the XPRIZE as the first reusable aircraft to fly into space and return and then do it again. After which, Sir Richard Branson, seeing the success, decided to invest and take the project to where it is today, so that he too could share the dream of flying into space. And the world now has an entire technology, thanks to Burt's genius and those who could recognize it and decided to invest in it, that didn't exist only a few years ago and never would have had naysay had their way. And basically, he channeled what Ronald Reagan once noted was the base instinct of Big Brother. If it moves, tax it. That's why he said, I've announced the Securing Protections Against Carbon Emissions Tax Act. Oh, give me a break. The space tax, we're calling it. Space exploration, he said, shouldn't be a tax-free holiday for the rich. Well, if these people get their way, folks, and they seem to have had a long string of doing precisely that, men with the vision of Burt Rutan and others will never be allowed to help open the final frontier to the rest of us. They will destroy anything that looks like innovation or the ability of free people to do what they want, go where they want, build what they want, and not be taxed out of existence by jealous, myopic cretins like Oregon Congress critter Blumenauer. As Jeff Reynolds concluded for PJ Media, as always, if some liberal hears about someone having fun, his first instinct is to tax it or outlaw it. Of course, if it's deadly to you folks, like the poke, their instinct is to mandate it. This piece also fits into the ugly category, but for different reasons. Brad Palumbo writes for the Activist Post, courtesy of Fox News as well, that American families are already struggling amid mounting price inflation that's eating away at their budgets. Thank you, Big Brother, and fiat money now coming to its inevitable end. What with higher costs for housing, vehicles, fuel, and you name it. Yet, a top CEO is now warning that the growing inflation problem facing Americans probably will get much worse in coming months. The latest June data already shows price inflation at a 13-year high. Prices have risen 5.4% already year over year, and proponents of the big government policies driving much of this increase insist, oh yes, don't worry your pretty little heads about it, it's only temporary. And as I point out, yeah, so is your life. But billionaire and grocery chain CEO John Katsimatidis just predicted that overall price inflation, and especially for consumer goods generally, will hit a 6% annualized rate by October. Those of us who follow the work of John Williams at Shadow Stats realize that, oh, they've been lying about the numbers. The real inflation rate is probably well over 10% already. It's just that eventually, even Big Brother will have to admit we've lost control of it. In an interview with Fox Business, the CEO warned that his industry is seeing skyrocketing costs on the supply chain side and that businesses will inevitably have to raise prices for consumers as a result. Food prices at Katsimatidis are getting higher, and we expect even more increases by October. You have to pass those extra costs on to consumers, or you're not doing your duty to God, he said, your country, your employees, and your company. And he suggested that the rising costs could mean an astounding 10 to 14% specific increase in grocery prices by October. That's ugly, but your host will suggest again, folks, that it's been a long time coming, and you ain't seen nothing yet. This, too, is ugly. Comes via Paul Joseph Watson and Summit News about what else? Another leftist from the state of Texas, one of the Democrat state representatives who got on board the infamous private jet, tried to escape doing their constitutional duty, and recognizing that the election had been robbed, there were those that were trying to prevent similar outrages and affronts to the Constitutional Republic in the future. But no, said the wannabe communists, you can't have a quorum. So they flew off to Washington on a private jet and became super spreaders in the process. One of them, a maskless Democrat named Texas State Representative Donna Howard, who appeared in the now infamous photo of the happy maskless hypocrites on that private jet, faces ridicule after she calls for what? A mandate for you peons to be forced universally to wear masks. Yeah, and your blankety-blanket little kids, too. Howard is now facing mockery, says Watson, and your host adds, and rightfully so, after she vehemently called for school children to be forced to wear their face muzzles in class, saying, we need to follow the science here.
Are you crazy? Or just plain stupid?
Stupid is stupid does, Mrs. Blue.
I guess.
And from there we go on to the ugly that honestly was masquerading as good, at least so far as the headline was concerned, but only until you read the details. This comes from the Epoch Times, Mimi Nguyen Le, also via Tyler Durden and Zero Hedge, about the state of Pennsylvania, where the leftists, and there's your first clue, have decertified a rural county's voting system, citing a violation of the election code. What? Leftists coming out and saying there was fraud? Ah, see, there's the rub, and that's where it gets ugly. Pennsylvania's top election official, begins the piece, has decertified the voting system of rural Fulton County. What? Not Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, or any of the other leftist centers? No, for future elections, saying that an election assessment by a third party, there you go, had violated the Keystone State's election code, according to a release on Wednesday. Acting Secretary of State Veronica DeGraffenried, an appointee of none other than the far-left Democrat Governor Tom Wolf, informed the Fulton County Board of Elections that she did not arrive at this decision lightly, or probably not without some help from those who were pulling her strings. Wake Technology Services, Inc., a software company based in Westchester, PA, had carried out an election assessment involving workers visiting Fulton County in December through early February. The company in May released a report concluding that the election was, oh, say it with me, folks, well run and didn't have any signs of fraud in Fulton County, which may actually be true for a rural county. However, five issues of note were uncovered, three related to Dominion Voting Systems. We've heard that crooked, disgusting name before when it comes to election fraud and communist takeovers, haven't we? Whose voting system was used in the county for the 2020 election. Quote, while these may seem minor, the impact on an election can be huge, said Wake TSI of the five issues. And at the time, Dominion disputed the report's findings. Now, here comes the ugly part. The Pennsylvania Department of State said in a statement Wednesday that Wake TSI's access to Fulton County's voting system, get this, quote, undermined the chain of custody requirements and strict access limitations necessary to prevent both intentional and inadvertent tampering with electronic voting systems. And the unauthorized access, yeah, see, the good guys are really the bad guys here, prevents the vendor, one of the really good guys, Dominion, from, quote, affirming that the system continues to meet state and federal certification standards, unquote. And there you have it. Folks, see, the very act of having a constitutionally protected check and balance on a crooked election, i.e., a forensic audit after the fact, which is allegedly the point of these chain of custody laws, is what's being attempted to be discredited here. Why, it's Dominion that we can trust to have all of the good stuff. They wouldn't lie now, would they? And if they ever did, Maricopa County and other places like that have shown how easy it is to cover up for them by simply stonewalling all access, period. And when it suits them, they'll even destroy the evidence. Concludes the Epoch Times story. Wake TSI was also involved in the election audit still underway in Arizona's Maricopa County up until their contract expired in May. They managed to drag it out long enough, I guess, that happened. The audit there was ordered by the Arizona State Senate and the Republican majority. But Dominion machines in Maricopa County have now been ordered to be replaced. State Senate President Karen Fan, Republican, said the machines were not tampered with during the audit and questioned the decision by the Board of Supervisors to get new machines, saying, quote, if their experts can't prove the machines have not been tampered with, then how does the Secretary of State's office or county elections certify the machines before every audit to guarantee that they haven't been tampered with, unquote. Well, folks, you know that neither logic nor integrity have any place in what's being done to overthrow a formerly free republic. There seems to be a smokescreen here, but there's also something else that we can smell, and it's a rat. And yeah, folks, it's all very ugly. Next, we turn for more ugly to America's Centers for Higher Indoctrination. Millions of students across the country, says a piece from LeoHolman.com, are waking up to the reality that getting a college education sick now requires them to submit to a new medical treatment that the U.S. Food and Drug Administration still considers experimental. And those of us who have been paying attention consider it downright dangerous, if not deadly. Some, though, are halfway or more into their degree programs with tens of thousands of dollars in student loan debt already having been amassed, only now to find out that they cannot finish those degrees unless they submit to an all-new vaccine, which really isn't. It's a not vaccine because it uses mRNA gene therapy that's already caused thousands of serious adverse reactions in young people, and who knows how many, but they're not going to tell you, deaths. Some classes can be taken online, but not those, he notes, requiring lab work or hands-on training, meaning that if you don't take the required poke, you simply don't graduate. Oh, sorry, Charlie. How's that for an incentive to bend over and take one, even if it kills you? Says Holman, evidence of an emerging two-tiered society is difficult to overlook. A society in which young people face immeasurable pressure to inject something into their bodies that they should fear is much more dangerous than the disease it claims, without any actual scientific data, to prevent. The COVID recovery rate in people aged 17 to 22 is about 99.9%, maybe more, but the long-term health impact of the shots, he says, will be anybody's guess. I will suggest, based on a whole lot of data that we already have seen, even if it's being suppressed, and you'll get banned from two Facebook for pointing to it, suggests that the long-term health impact, not to mention long-term sterilization, is downright devastating. And he goes on to note that Dr. Peter McCulloch, the most highly cited U.S. medical doctor in COVID-19 treatments in the country, perhaps in the world, said in a July 19 interview with Brandon House that the CDC has already documented over 2,000 cases of myocarditis involving inflammation of the heart in vaccinated people under the age of 30. And that's just one of the problems that the cardiologist, internist, and epidemiologist on the medical staff at Baylor University says he's treating. Quote, they need heart failure medication, 3 to 6 months of no physical activity. Can you imagine having 20 million college kids put under the menace of being given vaccinations, or what they now call vaccinations, and then an array of unlucky kids who develop myocarditis, and it's going to screw up their college or high school education over the next few years, he told House. It's really extraordinary. And I've been on national TV multiple times. And listen, nobody under 30, he says, ought to consider this vaccine under any circumstances. And myocarditis is just one of the reasons. He's also seen cases of Bell's palsy, partial paralysis, blindness, ringing in the ears, and says most of these conditions are not showing up until 6 to 8 months after people were given the injections. Oh, and guess what, folks? There's a whole lot of people who haven't been 6 to 8 months since the injection yet. There are about 400 U.S. college campuses now mandating the poke, and many of them are offering religious exemptions, but getting such an exemption is not always easy. In fact, some schools make it incredibly difficult to opt out on the basis of one's religious convictions. But the intransigence of some university administrators on the issue may be nowhere better exemplified than at Edward Via College of Osteopathic Medicine, VCOM, a private university in Monroe, Louisiana, where three students have already been denied religious exemptions and are now threatening to sue the school. One of the many public interest law firms being inundated with requests for legal help from students across the country is the Orlando, Florida-based Liberty Council, and they sent a demand letter dated July 20 to officials at VCOM on behalf of those three medical students denied religious exemptions who claim they've also been threatened and harassed by school officials, all because they refused to take the COVID poke that they believe violates their faith, and oh yeah, it might kill them. Besides, some faiths have a problem with suicide, it turns out. Continues the story, students at the college are also required to wear the face muzzles until they provide proof that they have been poked, and Louisiana law requires all colleges to grant an exemption from a vaccine upon receipt of what's called, quote, basic written dissent from the student. The student succeeded in this case, the state's legal requirements, by completing the school's forms, submitting their own personal letters and statements from their ministers confirming that having an injection violates their sincerely held beliefs. One student also pointed out that all three COVID vaccine providers, Moderna, Pfizer, and J&J, used aborted fetal cell tissue lines in their testing phase, and he had a problem with that. Basically, another reason for not wanting to participate directly or indirectly in the destruction of human life. And according to Liberty Council, the school not only denied all three of the students' exemption requests, but created a snitch program instead, targeting students who refused to take their death-dealing poke. They've been singled out, have received threatening emails, told they could be suspended or expelled if they continue studies without taking the poke, and had a number of what they call embarrassing confrontations. And while I do question why anybody would really want a medical degree from an institution that would rather kill you than give you a diploma, given what that says about their integrity and their respect for the science of medicine, I certainly understand why these students are angry. We all should be, at a bare minimum.